another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am your host, Triforce Todd. Joining me today is Tellius Tyler.
Yes, this is great. I'm still the first introduction. Wow. Wow,
well,
what an honor.
I wanted to thank you for your support over the last few weeks, and so it only felt right to announce you first. And then next announced our returning guest host for 2 weeks in a row, King Koopa Keith.
Yay, what's up, guys? I'm back again. Yeah, I'm going to talk some Nintendo stuff, hopefully, this time.
Some. We would hope. It's a Nintendo podcast.
Yeah.
Just a little. And, ladies and gentlemen, back from the dead, somehow, we're still looking into how, Wario Will!
Oh, jeez.
You just had to jinx me before I left. You just had to write me into the great beyond. You know what? Dishonor. Dishonor on your whole families. Dishonor on you. Dishonor on your cow. Dishonor on your gotcha look on Faye.
You know what's so sad about that? I love that bit. I love that movie. I don't think that's going to be in a live-action movie.
Oh, no. No Mushu in the live-action movie.
So
they already
sad.
Confirmed. Yeah, we can have a witch, but we can't have Mushu. Jerks. All of them. But yes, Will is back after his multiple week absence. We are happy he's back. He is completely healthy. Well, you know,
you would not believe how much of us had to be scared of the C virus. And yes, I'm going to call it the C virus just as much for catchier.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, it's like, whew, it's hot. I'm scared of the virus, but thankfully I'm not sick.
That's yeah.
Not that I'm aware of right now, so hopefully it's dead.
And we're glad. We're glad that your physical health is fine. Well, your mental health is still in question, but we've known that for years.
Did the virus spread to Malaysia yet, Will?
Unfortunately, there were cases in Malaysia. Actually, in the hotspots, I actually traveled in each airport from Germany, from Singapore to Malaysia. Yeah, there were like some cases that actually were in the airports I traveled in.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully, I was not in mainland China, so that's the most important thing. If you were in mainland China, then you were pretty much out of luck. So thankfully, I was not there. I was in Hong Kong, so lucky me.
Yeah, you are lucky, and of course, to all those who are, you know, trying to make sure they don't catch the virus, our thoughts and prayers are with you. We hope you stay safe, and yeah. I don't know what to say in these kinds of things, because, like, you know, we hope you don't get sick. Like, what am I supposed to say? Like, here's a mushroom, you know, here's a one-up life, I don't know. I'm trying to think of, like, magical potions from Nintendo games, like, well, we had like the here's a fairy from Legend of Zelda. I'm sure it'll help you if your life heart's at zero.
Anyway.
Okay, moving away from this very awkward conversation that I have started, we have a very fun show today, and we are back at full power with Keith, of course, with us as well. So we got some fun stuff to talk about, but we're going to start it off with what have you been playing? And Will, I know you've been playing some things, especially since you've been back, so regale us of what you've been doing the last 3 weeks, game-wise.
All right. So, you two have been finally battling on, yes, I finally finished up one route of Fire Emblem Three Houses of the Crimson Flower, and I don't know, I definitely have a bad habit, when I play a game for a long time and then like I stop suddenly and only realize it was only had like a few more missions, like actually two missions from the ending. Like, wow, that was it? I was that close to the ending? I was like, wow, that's embarrassing.
You honestly did take the shortest path, finally got the Crimson Flower down. The Crimson Flower path is the shortest one, so you honestly did start out with the shortest mission, so.
Right. And so, yeah, finally finished that one route. And gotta say, got some interesting epilogue couples. I mean, I'm not sure if anyone of you got this one, Hubert and Bernadetta. Yeah,
no.
Got those two together.
I did
Hubert
not.
Hubert has
one.
Never survived in any of my playthroughs because I haven't done Crimson Flower yet.
So yeah, I got some pretty interesting couplings at the afterwards, and of course, finally put up my proof that yes, I did got up my completion. And so I'm just getting currently playing with the Ashen Woes DLC pack, which gotta say it's definitely challenging. The fact they just set you at a set level is not with all your levels grinded out. So that's actually quite kind of difficult, surprisingly, even on the casual difficulty as well. So yeah, definitely expect some difficulty over there.
So we're gonna talk about that later. But they built one down.
I got two more.
Two more only. Oh wow! I wonder how long that's gonna take you.
Actually, three more. I forgot about the snow. Yeah,
you're screwed.
Sorry.
I was cracking up when Will returned to the mainland because he immediately posted the proof that we were demanding.
Yes.
In last week's episode of his clear.
Yes.
Hello. After you two keep on batting on the previous podcast in my absence, what else was I supposed to do? Jeez.
We will praise you. You completed your Crimson Flower. We will praise you. You married an epic woman in Shamir. I married her too in one of my playthroughs. However, we do have to admonish you because you only were able to get 999 victories with Byleth.
Don't be a hater. And actually, legitimate question: is the counter only up to 1,000, or is it like?
I'm sure that you got more. I feel as though 999 was very odd. And the thing that made it most odd to me was 999 battles, 999 victories. Like, on the first chapter, did you only use Byleth to get kills? Like, I think you probably had some thousands.
Commonly overconscious here, I basically grinded my level retarded, and yeah, just grinded to the point.
No, I know, but
so, that's
your
kind of deal.
Battles versus victories was 1-1. That means Byleth never attacked someone and didn't kill them, like, at any point in the game.
Yeah,
like, I'm sure
that
at the end.
Odd.
But in the beginning, like, it has to be, like,
I know.
More than that.
Well, I mean, there are some people that actually do the whole solo run with Byleth, but that's another topic. But yeah, just briefly, because we had to get this moving on. Other games I actually tried is the Persona 5 Scramble demo, which came out in the Japanese eShop, which it is pure service. It is simply pure service. Like, obviously, it's not as a full-blown-fledged Persona 5, but it is pretty much damn close to what it is, like a Persona 5 2. Which is just, it's amazing.
Okay, so I want to ask you about
that. 36 score right now, but yeah.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, because I saw someone talking about that, because you've played Persona 5, obviously, and what, right now, in like 50 words or less, what's the real difference between Persona 5 and Persona 5 Scramble?
The difference between the two is basically, one, it is, like, the fact it can actually is a Musou-style game, but it's just, there's so much reference to the source material of the main game. Like, from the music, from actually the Persona usage of SPs, all that is just, it kind of basically expands a bit more of, like, how would a Persona game be in an action setting. And the Musou-style is, like, one... it's just like there's so much fan service, like so much detail to the source material that, again, like with Hyrule Warriors, as best comparison I can make, is just Hyrule Warriors, Fire Emblem Warriors. It's just like they pay a lot of attention to it. So it's basically like what take if it was in like an action Musou title. That's the best I can describe it. But it does
Tyler,
a lot.
Yeah.
You heard me say 50 words or less, right?
I did say 50 words.
I'm pretty sure I made that clear.
You did make that
clear.
Sorry.
I can't. Persona. I'm a Persona fan. Sue me.
You know you should have even put that limit on there because you know
he
loves Persona so
much. I had
much.
To try. All right. Keith, how about you? What have you been playing?
Pass.
Fine. I'll go next. I have been playing...
Because I don't want to upset you.
wait a minute. Stop. How could you upset me?
It's not a Nintendo game.
Dude, Will talks about non-Nintendo games all the time.
Okay, then fine. I take my pass. I'll take it for another time. How about that?
Okay.
I'll be really simple. Like I mentioned earlier, I've been playing a lot of Box VR, which is a boxing fitness game for various VR headsets. I've been playing that. I've been playing it for 3 days now for about an hour every day, and it's really working out the calories. It's really nice. It's fun. You get tired. You get fatigued. But the way the game engages you and with the techno and the rock music, you don't feel it until you're actually done and you go, wow, I just did that. So I've been playing a lot of that. On top of that, also Beat Saber. Beat Saber is crazy. Those custom songs are crazy.
Will was playing Beat Saber before he left, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have played Beat Saber, and yeah, like the custom songs, it like Even like the ones like that recently released, like KDA's, Popstar and all that.
I played Ignite from Sword Art Online.
I'm
expert, and I went, "Oh my god, what is this?" So I had to take off the arrows and played it, and it was still crazy.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I was out of breath. I was like, "Yeah, all right, I'm never doing that song again."
That reminds me of when
how Kirito feels like.
That reminds me of when I know it's a long time ago, but when Wii Boxing came out for Wii Sports,
that was fun.
I remember doing I remember doing my first match. I'm like, this is awesome. I like this. So I did like 3-4 matches in a row. By my fourth match, my arms were so heavy.
Yep. Yeah. Like, this is probably not the right thing to do. Yep. That's exactly how I feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. For me, I have been continuing in my adventures in Pokemon Shield, and I will offer my sincerest gratitude to Tellius Tyler for reminding me about the max raid battles. I now have a whole 6-party team up at like level 58, 59, 60. Where I was at like low, high 40s, mid 50s, and 137 because of my Glaceon, which I finally have. So thank you for that, Tyler. But I also want to call out complete bullcrap on some of these max raid battles. All right. If for those of you who don't know, max raid battles are in the wild area. They have like these long pillars that you can do, or you can find them with. And so you go to the max raid battles. You have 4 people versus 1 giant Pokemon with enhanced powers and abilities. Blah blah blah. And it's fine for the most part. I mean, they have higher defenses, which is fine. You don't want a one-hit KO battle and all that. I could not find a single online player to help me, so screw all of you. Not you, like my co-host, but you people out there. I needed you to take on that dang Lapras, and you weren't there. and speaking of that Lapras, okay? The Lapras' look? Awesome. Totally awesome. The moveset of that Lapras? Complete bullcrap. All right? This is a water and ice type Pokemon. I took it on with my level 60-ish Boltund, and it had rock and ground type moves. How? You're a Lapras! You're not supposed to be on the ground! Like, what the heck? And it just got so much weirder from that, and I looked up, I needed some help on Google on something, and it gave me the wrong Pokemon type about weaknesses. So I fought a fairy type with the type it was strong against instead of what it was weak against. Thanks a lot, Google. And so, like, I spent, like, days, like, grinding max raid battles as much as I could so that I could level up my team. And though I don't regret it because I got a lot of cool Pokemon and such, fighting a Lapras in max raid battle is complete bullcrap. I mean, seriously, it is so mean. And one time I had, like, a double knockout, but because my knockout, quote, happened first, it was enough to end the max raid battle. I'm like, bullcrap, man! I spent, like, 5 minutes on that battle. So, yeah, a little bitter. Little bitter, but I now have a full power team. I just took down Rayhan in much easier fashion than I remember with Pokemon Sword. So, like, I'm glad to see my balanced team is working out. I've been playing Fire Emblem Heroes. I may or may not have 420 orbs in my care.
It'd be great if you did. That'd be really convenient.
Totally did. I may or may not be saving it for Choose Your Legends whenever that comes around. So,
that comes around in August. So
it's August? Okay. There's some new banners coming up, so I'll be fine. But I've been saving up. I've also had a lot of good luck recently, including finally getting Choose Your Legends Hector.
Ah,
awesome.
Okay.
So I mean, I might try and get Celica just to complete the set because I have all the rest. And then all these banners, all these anniversary stuff. It's all crazy. And the defeat 1,000 foes. That's really helpful to do when you have a Tempest Trial.
Yes.
Tempest
sure.
Trial or like the rival maps. Yeah.
Right. So, been getting a lot of stuff through there. You know, just enjoying it. And then with Fire Emblem DLC, I'll be trying that soon once I'm done with Shield. That'll carry me off for a while at least. So, good times. Good times.
And I have been playing lots of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate as
you
No, I have been playing Super Smash Bros. Ultimate basically nonstop. My older brother came down. My birthday was actually on Sunday. So my older brother flew in, DKDJ, as our listeners affectionately know him as. And we got to play some Smash Bros. We got to play some Mario Party as well. And I still don't have Super Mario Party on Switch. But dang, that game is so much fun. It is, no matter... I just think Mario Party in general, outside of 9 and 8 is just a surefire good time. Even 10 I thought was pretty fun. But we had a party with my roommates, and it was instantly taken back to when we were kids playing Mario Party. Naturally, we were yelling at each other the whole time, and down the stretch, somebody had to steal a star from another player. And although going into the game, I swore that I was not going to protest if somebody was going to try to steal from me. Naturally, when it came time, I was screaming and yelling and pleading my case desperately, which ended up working out. So my older brother's fiance ended up stealing from him, because he had 4 stars and I only had 3. It was the correct decision at the time. But hindsight bias is 20/20, and now everybody's saying that I was being a snake because I ended up winning by that 1 star. So it was just great comedy. But that game, the mini games are so good in that one. Like, they are all fun. I haven't played one that I'm like, oh man, this one stinks, or oh, I hope that one doesn't come up. Like, they are really, really a solid batch of mini games. So yeah, Super Mario Party.
I remember like a whole summer of me and my best friend Tyler and some of the other guys just going to the local video game rental place, getting Mario Party 3, and just spending the summer just playing all the various mini games. That was like that Smash Brothers, and I think Mario Kart was our summer, and it was so good. But we hated each other so much when we played Mario Party.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just like 90% of the fun too, like just the going back and forth over it. I love watching people play it because the eyes widen when the star is placed right in front of you, only to have it snatched away, and to see the despair, the swings of human emotion in Mario Party.
Yep.
Classic
good times.
Yep.
All right. Well, with that, we are going to head to a very jam-packed news week. So it's time to go down the warp pipe. Now, before we get started with the news, there is something that I have to do. Will, do you have the sound clip ready?
Ready.
Play it.
Oh my God, no.
Part where we throw our heads back and laugh. Ready?
Ready.
All right. So if you recall last week, ladies and gentlemen, one Tellius Tyler made a bold prediction that we would have a Nintendo Direct this week. He banked on it. He put his pride. He put his money on it. I've got $40 in my pocket to prove it. And no, I don't, but I wish I did. And so, Tyler, this one's for you.
Well, hold on. Hold on. Don't get too excited now because,
no,
listen, there's still tomorrow. There's still tomorrow.
No. Go back to the podcast. You literally said that you bet that it would be announced on Tuesday,
right,
and it'd be up for either today or tomorrow. And there's no way, barring a random Nintendo Direct Mini, which I doubt they would do in this case, that just randomly pops up on Friday. So, no, Tyler, you lose. Good day, sir.
So, okay. So you're right. I know I promised you guys a Nintendo Direct this week, and it didn't happen. I'm just as shocked as you are. I'm stunned and disappointed, but I have great news. This week coming up, there will be a Nintendo Direct. That's
I
right.
wouldn't say that.
Uh-huh. Sure.
This week.
I wouldn't do it.
I'm sure. Listen, this one can't lose. It's guaranteed to be this week. Route has never been this long.
I will tell you this. I don't know when it is, obviously. But when I did talk to our contact with Nintendo, they did say that they're still finalizing their plans for PAX East, which is end of this month. They could be planning something.
That's true. No, that's a good point. I feel like if they waited for, like, they usually don't wait for a convention.
No,
they traditionally
don't.
They usually don't have us wait this long, although last year it was right around this time that we had the first Direct of the year.
Someone's been counting the days. This is the longest Nintendo Direct drought in history.
Outside of the drought from 1887 through 2011. That drought was slightly longer.
Nice.
But
very nice. Well played.
That wasn't me. Somebody posted it on Twitter. I thought it was
that,
very
I
funny.
Like that. That's nice. Tyler was wrong.
Yeah,
I was
wrong.
Right. Will, if you still have the clip, go ahead and play it again. I don't worry about it. I didn't know if you had it queued up just in case. Anyway, so we're gonna move on from Tyler's shame. to move on to another piece of big news, Nintendo at E3. So this week, Geoff Keighley, the head of the Game Awards, among other things, noted that for the first time in 25 years that he will not be at E3 or hosting the E3 Coliseum, which is obviously another huge blow to E3, considering that Sony has once again backed out for now the second year in a row. However, in a statement by the ESA, they have confirmed the following things, if my bloody browser will come. There you go. Several leading video game companies have already committed to participating in E3 2020, including Xbox, Nintendo, Ubisoft, Bethesda Softworks, Sega, Capcom, Square Enix, Take-Two Interactive Software, Bandai Namco Entertainment America, Inc. What's with these names, people? And Warner Brothers Games, among others. So
Yeah.
And Nintendo's one of the Nintendo heads, Doug Bowser, said, "We look forward to participating in E3 2020 as one of many ideal venues for us this year to interact with people in a social and immersive environment. Every year, we base our approach to E3 on the content we have to share." So yes, Nintendo will be there, and we should be grateful.
Yeah, this whole thing reeks of desperation. I'm sorry.
On whose part?
Yeah, the ESA.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, like, wait a minute, whose part here?
No, yeah. They've lost a lot of clout. They've lost a lot of respect because of the media leak over the last couple of years and information that we found out more that it wasn't just 2018. It was also 2017. I think another previous year. Sony's not coming, obviously. Microsoft is not going to be there. They are going to have it in their own center.
Interesting.
So it's technically not at E3. So I don't know why they're doing that. Bethesda usually has theirs off the E3 floor as well. So that's also weird. At least when I went there, they had us go somewhere completely different. It wasn't at E3. Obviously, the other ones will be there. I doubt Take-Two is going to have anything. Capcom hasn't said anything. Square Enix will probably be showing off more Final Fantasy and Outriders. And Warner Brothers, what do they got? Batman? That they keep saying they're working on, but they won't tell anybody anything?
Yeah, I hate that. They've been teasing like for like 2 years. Like, what the heck?
So, this list doesn't really instill any, oh, great, we've got firepower, come to E3. Because it's like, oh, that's nice. Those same companies will be at PAX too. Why do I want to come to E3?
More expensive and everything, yeah.
Exactly. E3 needs to rebuild, and what they're doing right now isn't helping. And the fact that you've lost a big piece, the fact that Geoff Keighley is not going to be there, the Coliseum is not going to be there, that's going to have a lot of people thinking about going there, because the Coliseum was a big part of E3, and that's not there. And they lost a huge chunk of entertainment.
Yeah.
Keith, because we talked about this recently, but I don't believe you were on the episode. Do you think that E3 is going to disappear in the next couple of years?
Oh, we didn't talk about it with you guys, but we also talked about it on the Spectator Mode. We came down to the same conclusion. I don't think it'll disappear, but it needs... Okay, what I said is, if they don't change up their tactics, they are going to disappear. When E3 came out, there were no big gaming conventions out there. We didn't have Gamescom. We didn't have Tokyo Game Show. We didn't have PAX. We didn't have half the shows we have now. And now they're sticking to their old model, where all these newer ones have been drawing more and more people every year. PAX East sells out. PAX West sells out. Gamescom has a huge audience. Tokyo Game Show has a huge audience. E3 is a mixture of industry, media, and until recently, also casuals. Now, they changed it up this year. They had originally told us that a couple hours of the first day of E3 would just be for press, and we yelled at them and said, no, this is dumb. We need at least a day. So they did come out and finally say, hey, the first day of E3 will be for press and industry only. But you've lost a huge chunk of people coming to your event.
Yeah.
No, why do I want to come there now? You've also pissed off a lot of the journalists and media. A lot of people are already saying, we're not going. Geoff Keighley is not going. There are going to be more people coming out saying, we're not going.
Yeah, no. So you're right. What do you think they need to do to, stay afloat or to right the ship?
For one, they have to demonstrate to the people that they actually care about their privacy, their security, and they have not done it yet. They were absent. They were completely quiet about what they did for months. People kept asking, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Oh, we've got this new setup on our website now. Okay, we've been asking this for 4 months. What the heck? Now you're just telling us this now? we don't trust you.
Yeah.
There's no draw. Tell me why I should go to E3 over, I'm going to say it again, PAX or any other gaming convention. What do you have that it's not there?
It's just like the legacy of E3, you know? Like, E3 is like, because you had said that Nintendo might do a Nintendo Direct around PAX. Like, they haven't done that yet. You know, like at E3, there's always been those big shows. But if they lose those, which they've lost Sony already, then I agree, they would absolutely have nothing. Right now, I think they still at least have the Nintendo show. And even though you said Microsoft's not going to be in the convention center, they're still at E3 this year.
I mean, when I went to E3, Nintendo had a big booth at E3, but the big stuff was online. It was like, all right, great, that's nice and all. And it was complete chaos, and all they had was kiosks. I mean, they were there, but it wasn't really a big deal.
Right, right. It was in the age of the Nintendo Direct.
The problem with E3 is they were set up to be an industry-only event. It's made up to be for business people to meet up, to talk shop, to sell their product. Because you can't buy anything there yourself.
Right.
Other than t-shirts and the gift shop, where you would call it. Other than that, you can't do anything. They need to, if they want it to evolve, they've got to make it more consumer friendly. They have to. The location is the when I went there, that convention hall was barely utilized. They had stuff upstairs they could have used. The spacing was all jacked up. With all the people in there was no room to move around. You were literally a sardine.
Yeah.
It was terrible. People were set up their equipment to record and take pictures. People were walking by, knocking it down constantly. It was utter chaos. They need to make it more consumer friendly. And that means you're going to have to jettison your portion of the industry talk. But if you do that, then again, you're just another gaming convention.
Right, exactly.
And when you say legacy, legacies come and go. Boston Celtics was a great legacy, great dynasty. Now they're meh.
So you hit in the right spot with me with bashing the Celtics. Now, and it's interesting to have a perspective of someone who's been there, just because we talk about it, we haven't actually been at the show. To me, E3 is still special because I know that, you know, on June 12th, I'm going to wake up at 9 a.m. or whatever and watch Nintendo announce, you know, 15 games, and I'm going to be very excited about it, unless, of course, it's Metroid Federation Forces, the big title.
Don't you joke about that. Don't you say it, sir.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, because I was the same way. When I finally got there, it was a childhood dream. Like, I'm going to E3. I'm finally going. After all the time they're inviting me to go, I finally went, and it's like, all right, this is, this is not what I expected. Not at all. Nope.
All right, we need to move on. Yeah. We're going to move on to a Fire Emblem DLC. What was it? Cindered Shadows, right?
Yep.
Cinder Shadows has officially come out. For those of you who don't recall, quick recap, it is the quote-unquote, well, I guess the fifth, I suppose, fifth story, fourth house of Fire Emblem, of three houses. It's hard to say fourth house of three houses. Ugh, stupid Nintendo.
Yeah.
But yeah, you get a whole new area via the Abyss. You got four new characters that can join your party in the main game. As Will noted, it's very challenging. In fact, the team noted that they wanted to make this the most challenging, even on the normal difficulty, let alone the highest one. So it will take you about 8 to 10 hours to complete, based on how quickly you can get through maps and everything. And then the characters from Cindered Shadows can join you in the main quest. And as I can confirm now via YouTube, almost spoiling everything, you can marry all the characters from the Ashen Wolves house. So,
I actually kind of spoiled myself on Happy, and god dang it, Happy is freaking happy.
I've been going through just on a whim because I was bored. I was going through like a lot of the ladies that I haven't married yet, and I don't know what it is, but some of the art of like the final snapshot, you know, where they do like the bride shot or the groom shot, if you will, like some of them just look freaking weird.
Oh, right? Edelgard is so bad, man.
Edelgard has like the bug eyes. It's crazy. And then I don't know if you've seen it. If you go to Felix's,
oh,
It looks like he's choking out Byleth as he's like.
In a perspective, yeah, I can understand it. Yeah, yeah.
Like I saw it from a distance. Like it was like the headshot or the header image, and I'm seeing like Felix growling at her while holding her neck, and I'm like, that's dark.
Classic Felix, what a dog.
Felix is always been a jerk, but he wants to do the whole Cabedon.
Yeah, but again, when he's with Annette, he can't help but like be kind. And yeah, apparently, when like Byleth's his wife, he's all like, you know, 50 Shades of Fire Emblem. So,
man,
take that as you will. Oh gosh, but I'm gonna be getting this hopefully in the next few weeks. I got some. It's probably gonna be a busy month for me, month and a half for me, but I'll get to that later. So I look forward to talking about this, and Will, of course, let us know how you're doing with this week to week. You know, if you actually get to play it. You know, heaven forbid that the DLC takes another 2 years for you.
Oh, you know.
At least this thing is much more, like, significantly short, so hopefully I actually can't get
this
through
it. This is true. This is true. All right, moving on to a story that honestly brought Keith back to the table. Pokemon Sword and Shield. So, rewinding the clock a little bit, right before it launched, about 2 weeks before the 1st of November, on the 1st of November, 2 weeks before it launched, there was a massive leak that basically ruined all of exposed all of the new Pokemon, the Dynamax forms, the Gigantamax forms, a lot of the trainer reveals and all that. And a lot of people were mad. And among those people was Nintendo and the Pokemon Company, because they literally worked really hard to try and keep things contained. They were doing the 1 minute trailers intentionally because they wanted to surprise people and to not have the evolution spoiled and the Gigantamax transformation spoiled and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the leak just ruined all of that. So they literally went to war. They went to court. They got subpoenas for 4chan, a whole bunch of other people. And they found out that it was a Portuguese website called, I kid you not, F Nintendo. Yeah. And apparently they had received an early copy of the game for review purposes, but they broke the contract that you basically sign when you get those codes, and the person who reviewed the game leaked it all over the internet, and so they have now definitively cut off all ties from F Nintendo, and they did like a statement about it. They go, Nintendo will always protect its intellectual property and brands. Leaks not only hurt Nintendo, but thousands of employees who work hard to bring games to market and the millions of fans around the world who look forward to news and prizes. So it's good that they caught the guy. It's good that this potentially is stopped at least for a little while until the next leaker comes around. But we wanted to talk about why these leaks are bad. And we actually talked about this in a certain way on a podcast a long time ago about are leaks good for the industry. But Keith wants to talk about why this kind of leak is bad for the industry. Keith, take it away.
Well, I'm going to speak on our perspective first and then talk about the industry. So, as you guys know, we run a small gaming site here. I wouldn't say small. I would say it's not as known as we would like it to be. But
we're trying.
We're definitely trying.
We're trying.
Do great work. We do great work here. And anyway, not too long ago, there was a game that was coming out for, was it 3DS? Yeah. And it got leaked. And Nintendo came down hard on most of the websites, most of the outlets, but more specifically, the smaller sites, the smaller brands. And I'm not just saying that for saying it. I've actually talked to some Nintendo-related gaming websites and other gaming-related websites, and they all said the same thing. Nintendo pretty much told them they don't know if they will ever get copies of review codes again because they didn't know who did it, and I guess they weren't as interested or focused on finding out who exactly leaked the game. So it hurt us. It still hurts us to this day. Before that, we had a great relationship with Nintendo. Now it's not so good. It's not where I want it to be. It could be where it was that it is. Because of these leaks. They think the smaller sites are doing it because they want to get their 15 minutes in internet fame. So they're desperate for clicks. Which is what they happened with F Nintendo. They got a copy of the game. They get an NDA. And when you get a review copy, you're told, hey, you can't do certain things. Either you can't stream it, you can't talk about it, you can't post videos about it, nothing. Shut up until we tell you can talk about it. And they didn't do it. More importantly, they got a copy of a game that most people would love to get their hands on early to play it, to review it, to do whatever they need to do. And they took advantage of the situation to get their 50 minutes of internet fame. So I'm glad that Nintendo caught the people. I'm glad they did their due diligence and pretty much said we're not working with them anymore. Honestly, I think Nintendo was a little bit too fair because they easily could have shut that site down completely. Say, you know what? Your guys are done. They could have went after them, sued them for everything they had. And we talked, myself and another gentleman talked about this. There's so many things Nintendo could have done. But they say, you know what? We found out who you were. We're telling the internet who you are. This might hurt you in the long run because you might have other companies to say, oh, well, you broke ties. You did this with Nintendo. You might do this with us as well. So maybe we don't want to associate with you. It stinks. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. I would hate for that to happen to us because that would break us. But they did what they did, and then they got to lie in it. As far as leaks stink. Leaks take away so much effort from the developers, the publishers, the PR company, the hype they build up about it, and whatever plans they have. Like the Division 2. Division 2 had a stream yesterday about an upcoming DLC, but everything was leaked a day ahead of time. So that hype was ruined. Completely ruined because everybody knew what it was. They knew how much the game cost. They knew what the game was about. The only thing they didn't have was the gameplay. Leaks are terrible. It takes the surprise and the fun out of an announcement of a game that you're looking forward to. And they hurt. But unfortunately, we live in a day and age where the person that's in the warehouse distributing the game or the overzealous person who works at the PR or works at the developer or works at the publisher wants to get the word out real quick. And they blab their mouth. Or they leak something they shouldn't have leaked. Or they leave something in the cafeteria or in the back of a car, who knows? And voila, there goes your leak. It's terrible.
Now, do you think that there's a way to stop leaks? Or because I agree with you to a point. Like, I think that the joy of being surprised by an announcement is something that any gamer knows what it feels like when they saw a game that they've always wanted to have announced, and then boom, there's the sequel that you've always wanted. The joy is immeasurable. And when it's told beforehand, it's definitely, you're robbed of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think that companies either need to like really speed up their announcement times or kind of, I know it stinks, but accept that this is the new reality. Like you said, anybody at a warehouse could put something out that they shouldn't for their 15 minutes of fame, or they don't realize what they're doing, or, you know, it's just any reason you can think of. With the internet, I mean, the information is just it's so easy to get it out there.
But there are ways of stopping that. There have been companies that have been able to do this for quite some time, and it's pretty much being more vigilant, knowing who's going to have access to what. And if, for example, we all have access to a certain thing, but I only show you each a different piece of the puzzle. So say that piece of puzzle gets out there. I know you had accountability over it. I know you were the one working on it. I know, and it started with you. And companies do that. Only certain people get access to certain things. Look at Smash. That's... Look at the recent Smash announcement.
No, you're right. Byleth was definitely a surprise. That one, I'm surprised they kept that under wraps. But conversely, Hero got leaked. Terry got leaked. Banjo got leaked.
Right.
Joker and Piranha Plant didn't get leaked. But Piranha Plant was on, like... Nobody took the Piranha Plant leak seriously. Somebody did get that right.
And
but,
the problem with the leaks is, though, it depends on what it is and how severe it is. Because I guarantee a company will know, hey, this is getting leaked. And they're like, you know what? This is free press for us. Whatever. Fine. And it does work that way. But at the same time, I'm still waiting for a company to fake everybody out. Nobody's done it yet. Something gets leaked. And then everybody's like, oh, we're talking about this. We know about this. And they come out and go, oh, that stuff that was leaked? We put that out there on purpose. That's not our announcement. This is our announcement. Still waiting for somebody to do that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like what companies should do now these days in order to combat such leaks. I mean, like with the Devil May Cry, Capcom's recent thing regarding to like people thought like Dante was gonna be coming. Like, no, yeah, they played everyone that said playing that on that hype that Dante was coming, but nope. They just want to play into that disappointment, which I think that's, I believe more companies should utilize, like basically use false information to decoy the public if it comes at the trust of the people.
Or like Tyler said, be more forthcoming, be more transparent. Don't keep people in suspense so long. Don't say, we've got an announcement of an announcement of an announcement. Wait, what? Nobody cares about that. Just tell us, give us enough to make us thirsty and then come out a little bit later and give us some more information. Feed us along. Don't just go, we've got this game we're working on, and say nothing for the entire year.
Yeah.
Where's Metroid Prime? Where's Metroid Prime 4?
Retro has it now.
But see what I mean?
Yeah, that's it.
That was a unique situation though. They had someone working on it. It wasn't turning out well, so they said we have to go back to the project and, you know, give it to Retro. And they announced that. They said they explained exactly what happened. That's a different situation.
But they talked about it, the transparency.
Yeah, I know, I appreciate that. So, but yeah. All right. Well,
hold on. I got one more thing on this. I'm sorry.
I need to get going.
It's a good one though. So I have a conspiracy that I told you guys in the chat. I wanted to vocalize here.
Just hurry.
It is very odd to me that these leakers on the internet, like Sabi on Twitter, are always the first. They're always reporting these things. But it's strange that it never comes from like IGN or GameSpot. Or, like, those places are super connected. Why aren't they for that?
Yeah. They're trying not to sabotage themselves.
Yeah, they will get blacklisted. Look at Kotaku. They leaked a bunch of stuff from Bethesda a while ago, and they are still blacklisted to this day.
No, and
Bethesda will not talk to them.
That's true. No, you're right. But I'm going somewhere a little bit different. My idea, right? So when people tweet that stuff out, they get incredible amounts of clicks. If you are a gaming website, doesn't it make, because you always see whenever one of these people says something, all the companies, GameSpot, IGN, they all come and they write articles about what these Twitter people are leaking. And I bet you those articles get a ton of clicks. My conspiracy theory is that these people who are leaking these things aren't connected, always at least, to the gaming industry. They might be connected to the gaming journalism world. And like somebody at IGN could say, I got this scoop, but I can't say it because, as you said, I'll get blacklisted from Bethesda if I leak this Fallout thing. So they go, hey, somebody on Twitter, I have this piece. You put this out. You get the credit. I'm writing the article about your leak. And then that whole culture thrives. Listen, I don't have any evidence for this, but I feel as though there's something there. Like, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
To you?
No, it actually does.
I know it doesn't, honestly. But I don't know if that's what I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's, we are in an age of clicks and clickbait. Just look at Comic Book Resources, which has literally in the last year put out so much clickbait articles, I can't even count them. And I can count pretty high at times. I don't know. It could be, it could not be, or maybe they actually just hold on to the information because, you're right. You know, there's no doubt that IGN, with all of its vast network and all of its, you know, different countries of writers, there's no way they don't hear these leaks. It's just maybe they hold on to them and wait to see if they were true. And then the moment they get announced, you know, they write a nice big article because they know the clicks are coming because it's IGN. I don't know, but I don't know.
I mean, it's quite possible.
Yeah. Oh, nothing's up. No one's above reproach. I'm sure somebody at one of those sites has had that idea.
Yeah.
No doubt. But whether they enact on it, that's another story.
It could It could be somebody from the sites, just with a different name, a different persona.
Yeah, very well could be.
Yeah. I mean, they never said that, you know, multiple people have multiple Twitter accounts. We all know this is true.
That's right. Kevin Durant's out there.
Had to go after Kevin. Had to go after Kevin. Okay, we got to move on. All right, not so surprisingly, we got to talk about Smash Brothers because there's been a lot of interesting Smash Brothers stories coming out, including Sakurai potentially leaking himself when we might hear about the next Smash Brothers character. We're going to be talking about a Byleth article that he wrote in a bit, but at the end of that article in Famitsu, he wrote this. All that aside, I announced during the same presentation that I'd start development on the next wave of DLC fighters, which I'll go into some more during the next column. See you the week after next. So this was released on the 10th-ish. So 9th, 10th, whatever. So week and after next would be the final week in February, which is where both PAX East is and where many people, including potentially Tyler next week, after he's wrong again, will predict when the Nintendo Direct might come. Now, usually I would say this might be like a mistranslation or a pun on words, but he's saying specifically that I'm going to talk about the next DLC pack in the next column, which seems to indicate that we're going to at least get a teaser or an announcement of who might be the first fighter in the next fighter pack, which is completely possible because we've had announcements with long waits like Joker before and Terry and even Banjo to an extent. So maybe.
Is it going to be another Fire Emblem character?
Don't be mean.
I mean, I don't even play Smash, and when I saw the reveal, I was like, really? Another one?
It was. Yeah.
We talked about really this was on another podcast. All right. In a perfect world, there will only be up to 5 Fire Emblem characters in the game, but because everyone is here, and we have Echo Fighters and clones, we have, what are we up to, 8? 7 or 8?
Listen, I just think we need all to be an echo of Marth again, but like with some other weird sword twist. Like, he's a lefty. That's good enough. It's just Marth, but he's a lefty.
Yeah, yeah. All right, speaking of Byleth, since bringing the hate train over here, or should I say, Tyler, that he's being a Grinch? Yeah, you earned that one, Tyler. All right, we actually reported on this, I believe it was last week or the week before that, I can't remember now, but Sakurai elaborated more in an article on a Famitsu about how Byleth got into the game. And he reiterated, he said, quote, "My preferences don't play a role in which new fighters are added. Nintendo has a larger say in the decision and brings their thoughts to the table. At any rate, the theme for this character was how much freshness they brought to the game in regards to Byleth. The fighters that we have included in Smash Brothers tend to come from a series that have histories. For instance, Dragon Quest Hero, Banjo-Kazooie, and Fatal Fury's Terry Bogard. All first appeared about 20 to 30 years ago. I wanted to include a wide breadth of characters. For this fighter, an important factor was being able to turn the protagonist of a game that people are playing right now into a fighter that players could experience immediately in Smash Brothers. As such, I tried my hand at working on the character while the source game was still in development." So he was preparing for a Byleth as Three Houses was being made and then released. And that actually helped him more or less. He was very confused about the storyline because he couldn't obviously play all three paths at the same time. But that's where he came up with the idea of the hero relics, because he acknowledges, he said, quote, "Smash Brothers has a problem of there being too many sword fighters. So as a workaround, I considered what techniques the character should use and ended up implementing the Three Houses leader's hero relics," end quote. So, you know, he agrees there are too many sword fighters, and he also agreed that there's too many Fire Emblem characters, but in this case, it made sense because this was the newest character in a game you could play right now. And I'm sure Nintendo was thinking, hey, if we put Byleth in Smash Brothers, we could probably get more sales off Three Houses. We'll see. So.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it was an advertisement for Three Houses.
Advertisement, but like a low-key way of saying, hey, you know, this game is out there, and if you like the character here, you should go play the source game. It's that kind of
thing. Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, remember, they did Korin not long after Fates came out.
Korin was definitely an advertisement. Korin they announced before Fates launched.
This is true.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll see. But again, Sakurai said he did not have a hand in picking Byleth, but he did like the character, and he did his best to make sure it wasn't just another swordsman and just another Fire Emblem character. So stop the hate train. Claire's a Keith. Also, and finally, in the Smash Brothers front, at least, we may or may not have proof that Sora from Kingdom Hearts is not coming to Smash Brothers. This comes from the Kind of Funny podcast, where Imran Khan, who is a well-known video game journalist and insider, says that Nintendo did contact Disney, because they own Kingdom Hearts technically along with Square Enix, to use Sora as a character in Smash Brothers. They did contact them about trying to make that happen. But apparently, Disney Japan denied them that request. Now, let me reiterate, not Disney, Disney Japan. That's what he said. So, obviously this is not confirmed, and obviously we got 6 characters that could potentially be Sora, Riku, or Sora and Riku, as I noted a few podcasts ago. But yeah, right now, it is curious, and it may be pointing to Sora not being in Smash Brothers. Your thoughts?
Do you really want him in Smash?
What? Yeah. I mean, I've never even played Kingdom Hearts, but I want Sora in Smash. I think he's one of the most iconic characters to not be in at this point. It really fit.
Yeah. Now, to mention, Kingdom Hearts has a big presence on Nintendo systems between Chain of Memories, RE Coded, Dream Drop Distance. You know, we we, the Nintendo fan base, were helping carry that franchise while they were doing like the 6-year and 15-year breaks between K2 and K3. All right, we were helping. We were the ones helping them. Not
yeah,
Sony.
It's definitely interesting to see, like, because again, Sora is pretty much one of the main iconic characters known for crossovers. So, like, why not bring him into the ultimate crossover in video games, though? It just kind of seems to match. But to hear that Disney Japan wants to deny this opportunity is like, Disney, do you want money or not?
Yeah,
on top exactly. of the money you already have right now.
Yeah. And hey, if we're being completely honest here, Sora makes more sense than Cloud. I said it. Because Cloud has only been on the Nintendo platform because of Kingdom Hearts. He was in Chain of Memories. He was in RE Code, and I think he might have been in Dream Drop Distance. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've played that. But all of his appearances on the Nintendo platform have been because of the Kingdom Hearts franchise. So if you're going to bring in Cloud through that very loose connection, why not bring the character that made him get onto a Nintendo platform in the first place? So,
which character is more iconic, Cloud or Sora?
Cloud.
Ooh,
not even close.
Cloud. It's Cloud.
Cloud, really? I would think Sora.
No, Sora. Okay, Sora, I would say, has a more general appeal because of the Disney franchise, and Kingdom Hearts has obviously had him be front and center for multiple games, like, what, 10 games at this point, plus something?
Yeah.
But when it comes to Cloud, he's the iconic RPG character of the modern age.
Yeah.
All right.
Of the generation.
Especially now with Final Fantasy VII Remake finally, potentially, hopefully coming out this April until it gets delayed again. You know it's true. You know, and then Advent Children and Kingdom Hearts and just the desire of this character is off the chain. All right. It's like, guys like Tifa, but guys love Cloud. Okay. So Sora is great, no doubt. But if we're talking about overall impact on the gaming industry and the world today, it's Cloud without a doubt.
I know.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I hope personally that this is not true. That this is just a misconception or a false rumor, whatever you want to call it. I mean, obviously he wouldn't. This guy is a journalist. He would not just say this without proof, but this could have been, you know, a few months ago or a year ago when they started making Ultimate or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, you know, we changed our mind. Look at how well the sales have done. You know, like, where we at, like 17 some odd million. Hey, let's throw Sora in there. Why not? So things change.
True.
Things change. I mean, again, there was a time that Banjo-Kazooie would have never come to Smash Brothers. And then as we revealed last week, Minecraft allowed Microsoft and Nintendo to work together. And they were like, you know what? Let's give you Banjo. And here we are. So, why not?
What a great day.
What a great day. Such a perfect day. No. All right, moving on to something that Tyler will be happy about. Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Sonic the Hedgehog is coming out. Isn't it?
It's out now.
It's out now. Yeah. So, yeah, it's out now, but it's like the major release is technically tomorrow on Valentine's Day. It's Thursday at the time it's recording. And the initial reviews are mostly positive. It's hovering at about 70% on Rotten Tomatoes right now, which is
it
good
dropped.
For...
It dropped.
Where are we at, Keith?
When I looked at it before we started, it's at 65.
Ooh, it's dropped, Tyler.
Who brought it down? Who brought it down?
65 is about the same as 70 in my heart.
No, 70 means more. Think about it. It's like, once you reach 70, like seriously, like when you reach 70, 7 and up is like good and up. When you were at, like, 60 to 70, it's like you're close to being good. You're trying so hard.
So, I mean, that's fair. Everybody's going to read it differently. To me, the expectation for this one was it's going to be, like, the worst thing ever. So, with that expectation being completely surpassed, because even the negative reviews that I've read on Rotten Tomatoes have, none of them have destroyed the movie. None of them said this is a disgrace. They've just said it's too kid friendly. It's not like a Pixar movie where there's a message for adults and a message for kids. It's a kids movie through and through. And that's what a lot of complaints have been leveled at. Like, the plot's not particularly deep. And like, I don't need that. It's not a train wreck, and that is thrilling to me. And a lot of people in the gaming industry specifically have been extremely positive on it. I don't really care what the famous critics have to say about the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Like, it's not for them. It's for kids and for longtime Sonic fans. And the reaction from those people has been extremely good.
Yeah, I'm looking at a lot of reviews I saw on Rotten Tomatoes. A lot of these people reviewing the movie are basically saying it's Sonic. He's a bland character. Why'd they make this movie? And it's, I honestly think when you have a movie like this, that you shouldn't have a person who doesn't care about these type of movies reviewing these kind of movies.
Right.
Mm. Because they're going to go and go, well, this is dumb. Oh, I don't like video games. This is dumb. Well, if you don't like video games, why are you reviewing this movie?
Yep.
Yeah. Now, the first review I saw was actually from a geek website, and they gave it a 4.5 out of 10. And they cited that while Jim Carrey, who has been the unanimous star of this movie, according to many reviews that I saw, Jim Carrey is a tour de force of Robotnik, you know, James Marsden's character is just, like, there. You know, he's got, like, no depth, no, you know, storyline for himself, which you would expect from a kid's movie, I'm just saying. And Sonic is either you either love him or you hate him because of how much he talks. And, you know, I don't know, we were having a nice long discussion about this before the podcast started about, you know, what does it mean to be a good Sonic movie, what does it mean to be a good video game movie and everything. And, you know, Tyler, you are right, the fact that we were expecting a dumpster fire, and we're at, like, 65% right now, and, you know, there are, like, you know, near $1 billion movies that didn't even get close to that in the ratings. Then again, ratings really don't matter. If we're being completely honest here, Rotten Tomatoes is the most overrated site on the internet because it's trying to tell you what like 100 to 200 people are saying about the movie and that this is the rating you should care about, when we all know we just want to go see a movie and make our own opinions.
Right, man.
Exactly.
If Star Wars has taught us anything, you do not trust the ratings. Or superhero movies.
Yeah, so. A movie with like a 0 or a 20, like that, okay, that's a red flag, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be movies that you can just look at and say, and like, oh yeah, the critics are right to give that a 1. But then there's other ones where you could just tell that they just didn't get it. I feel that way about certain superhero movies. I know some people who didn't like Detective Pikachu were just being mean about it, and that's wrong. So, you know, as I've been saying for like the last couple of years, if you want to go see the movie, go see the movie. Enjoy it. Go in there, clear conscience, no thoughts of what the review said. Don't look at reviews for a movie I want to see, which is why I read the Sonic reviews. I'm not going to see it. I'm honest. I'm not going to see it. But I wanted to see what they said, and I kind of understood why they said what they did. But again, I don't know the movie. I haven't seen the movie. So I can't make an overt judgment, nor would I, like, say, try and restrain Tyler, who I heard loves Sonic.
I do. I am a bit of a fan.
It's a rumor, I heard. So, you know, if Tyler wants to go see it, go see it. And I'm not going to blast him for it. I'm going to blast him for other things you said, like the Nintendo Direct stuff, but for
next
Sonic.
Next week, there's going to be one, I promise.
Uh-huh. Promise that last week.
Like, I know, so... but I wouldn't break a promise twice in a row.
Oh, really?
Really? Dad. Uh-huh. How many times have you broken the promise to us, Dad?
How many times.
Say you would promise us a Christmas gift, but no, there's no Christmas gift beneath the tree. Yeah. Lie to us, Dad.
So, in the words of Invader Zim, you lie! You lie! Anyway, but I look forward to seeing how Sonic does at the box office. It won't be the biggest hit ever, nor does it need to be. It just needs to not bomb like a lot of other video game movies that we know and tolerate and or hate.
Hey, so, the fact that it got made should say something.
This is true. Made. And again, they listened to the fans and they redid Sonic's design. And we should be grateful for that. And we are grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, moving on to the release of Pokemon Home. Yes, it is finally out on Switch and on handhelds. And reviews have been positive. Sorry, I got the hiccups. Reviews have been positive. You know, there are obviously still some people who wish they could put certain Pokemon into Sword and Shield to complete their Pokedex. Not happening. You know, but we are getting at least 200 more in the Pokedex by the time the expansion passes come out. So, you know, take heart in that, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, the service I've seen has been praised. So that's good. I mean, Nintendo really wants this to be the go-to place for the Pokemon masters of the world to get all their Pokemon together to, you know, not lose the Pokemon that they've been raising for a long time. So that's good. I think a lot of people will get enjoyment from this.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and also, I've just also been reading on, like, the funny story with Pokemon Home. Apparently, like, I'm not sure, like, with the whole Grand Oak, new Professor Oak they showed off.
Oh yeah, the midlife crisis Oak. That's how I heard him was called.
Yeah, that was funny. That trailer was like surprisingly detailed of him walking towards the light.
No, that was Pokemon his... Masters.
Oh right.
Yeah, I'm about to talk about that, but we're talking about the Oak that you meet in Pokemon Home is like really stylized and has a lot of like flashy clothing, and so that's why they're calling it midlife crisis Oak.
I saw the pictures of that. I was just mixing them up in my head.
Now what Tyler is talking about is that Pokemon Masters is going to be getting a new trailer, and the teaser that they showed revealed that it's going to be Professor Oak. So you're going to have Professor Oak with a Pokemon in Pokemon Masters very, very soon. And they said, like, this is an event 24 years in the making, and they're not wrong. So now, pop quiz, ladies and gentlemen. We have already seen a Pokemon that Professor Oak has in the past. True or false?
True.
What was the Pokemon?
Pikachu.
No.
Rhyhorn.
No.
Rhydon.
No.
Stop,
you're embarrassing
Magmar.
Yourself. Stop. Magmar. No. It was Celebi.
Oh, okay.
He was the focus there. Of the Celebi movie, Pokemon Forever.
Oh. See, you can forgive me for thinking Gen 1 and then throwing Electrike in there because I couldn't remember the actual name for its evolved form.
All right, and obviously I don't know if Celebi or one of his other Pokemon, which I know was shown in the movie, are going to be the guide or its companion, but it's still cool to see that Professor Oak is going to get in on the action finally. Stop doing poetry, you dumb professor, and get back to the Pokemon battles! Anybody who remembers the anime will know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, and finally, and this I'll leave to Keith and Tyler, Nintendo Switch Online has gotten some more Super Nintendo games. Take it away,
Yay.
Guys.
Yeah, so once again, Nintendo has added new games to Nintendo Switch Online, and for some reason, Donkey Kong Country was not one of them. Somehow Donkey Kong Country is still not added to your Nintendo Switch Online Super Nintendo collection. We got Poppin' Twindy, Smash Tennis for the Super NES, and for the NES, Shadow of the Ninja which Keith said is pretty good.
It is.
And Eliminator Boat Duel, which I've never heard of any of those.
Yeah, the only good game out of all of these, and I'm going to be honest, is Shadow of the Ninja and Poppin' Twinbee, if you're a fan of their Gradius shooters, but with a QC spin on it. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really disappointing that they are releasing these games at such a slow rate. They used to do it monthly. I don't believe they've done it monthly for a while now. But honestly, they might still be. I just haven't been following it that closely because they haven't released any good games for
it. They haven't been.
Yeah. So it's very frustrating. There's the state of Nintendo Switch Online continues to baffle. You know, just, if you're going to release it, the games this slowly, you have to know that people would rather have Donkey Kong Country than Smash Tennis, or Donkey Kong Country 2 than Smash Tennis, or Donkey Kong Country 3 instead of Smash Tennis. Like, give us the good games. It's ridiculous. Or bring out N64 games, something to invigorate the I guess, underwhelming offerings that come with your subscription.
Yeah, this is slightly disappointing, to say the least.
Well, not everything can be a winner, sadly. And it, like you said, Keith, it's like no one really cares about about Nintendo Switch Online anymore. No. Really. We're glad we have online, and that's good, and it works for the most part, unless you're Tyler, because it crashes. It doesn't work for you. I've honestly never had problems outside of some random occasional disconnects from Splatoon, which happens. I mean, that's just the nature of.
Yeah, how often do you play online is the next question.
It depends on the game. It depends on the game. When I was playing Smash Brothers, I was playing a lot. Same with Splatoon, ARMS. For Fire Emblem, I have to have online technically.
Yeah, but that's different.
Pokemon, I have online. But
and you said you could never find people to play with.
That was just in max raid battles. That was joking.
I know, but how many people bought Pokemon again? 16 million? Like, somebody's out there looking for a max raid battle partner. They should be able to pair you up with them.
I don't know. You don't know how many people actually do max raid battles.
You do know. That one's numbers.
Anyway.
Three out of 16 million people playing the game are looking for a max raid battle.
Hey, what can I say? When it comes to my life, I'm lonely. All right. So moving on to our main event, we've been talking a lot in the last month or so about DLC, Fire Emblem, between Smash Brothers, between Pokemon, and of course all the other games out there in the universe that's not Nintendo. I know it's a shocking thing to say that there's games outside of Nintendo, but it's true. So we're going to now look at what our favorite DLCs of all time are, and we're going to do it in a Nintendo discussion. All right, Tyler, since this was your idea, why don't you kick it off? What is your favorite DLC of all time?
So for me, it's Mario Kart 8 Deluxes, or I guess Mario Kart 8 on Wii U. The Mario Kart 8 DLC, where they added the Egg Cup, the Hyrule Cup, the Bell Cup, and the other cup that I can't remember, but it's awesome. They added 16 tracks to Mario Kart 8, and they are pretty much all fantastic. I actually one time ranked every single one of the tracks, and I know I had Big Blue in my top five. I loved City take. In a way, mm-hmm. They gave you F-Zero back. They added the Blue Falcon as a cart in the game.
Yes.
And all of it was appropriately priced as well. I believe $20. And that's about on pace for what you would get for four cups. It was a really good deal. The price was right. And you could tell that it wasn't something that they had prepared right when the game launched, and they were just holding back to get people to buy it later. You know, this was something they took their time to create. And honestly, the quality of those courses might even be higher than what we saw in the actual game. And that game is filled with unbelievable tracks. But I mean, you have the Hyrule Cup. Duh, there's I missed. You have the Hyrule Castle course, which is fantastic. The Excite Bike track people really like. It's just one of the best pieces of DLC Nintendo's ever released. It's got to be my personal favorite.
Yeah, I remember that one. Like, I remember wanting to get that DLC, but for whatever reason, I think it was just because of like timing and money, I never got it. And then when they made Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, which was essentially Mario Kart 8 with all the DLC included, I was just in love, and I never not played Link. Like, once I could get Link, I used his cycle. I didn't care about any other characters. I don't care if there was like a faster combination. I wanted to play Link, and I did, and it was so awesome. And you're right, the Hyrule track was so fun. The F-Zero track was a blast. And you know, say what you will about Mario Kart over the years, you know, they have like backtracked and they try to do things that, you know, really haven't worked, but overall they know when it comes like to the real main title, 7, 8, Double Dash, you know, or a Tyler's favorite 64. kidding. But, you know, they know how to make Mario Kart. And that's why a lot of people are pumped for Mario Kart 9, because as long as they do as good and just a little bit better than 8 Deluxe, you know, it's going to be the best-selling game on Switch, no doubt.
Yeah. The music, too, specifically the F-Zero levels, because everybody knows Big Blue when you're playing Smash. But hearing like the trumpet version of that,
jazz version, yeah.
The jazz version, it's just so excellent. Just one of the most visually stunning DLCs and one of the most visually stunning games Nintendo's ever made.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe DLCs. Like, it's definitely one of the correct way for Nintendo to use DLC, especially just like tributing of unforgotten series like F-Zero. Like, okay, don't worry, we know you don't want F-Zero, so we're gonna put F-Zero into Mario Kart, so it should tide you over for at least a good solid hour or two.
It should tide you over a good solid 15 years before we release the next one.
Just like, again, it pretty much is like the expansion that is worth the money could be equally its own separate product. That's what I believe. Like, a proper DLC is. Like, it could be easily a separate product, but they made it as a simple DLC practice, and it's like 20, yeah, as you said, like $20, which is like perfect. There's a perfect price range, exactly.
All right, I'll go next, and I feel it's perfect that I go after Tyler, because this DLC was, I don't think you got this DLC, Tyler, but it was from one of your favorite games ever.
Was it from Xenoblade Chronicles 2?
No, not that game.
Oh, thank God.
No, it is that game! You fool! It is indeed Xenoblade Chronicles 2, Torn of the Golden Country. And this basically was a DLC expansion pack, second game, whatever you want to call it. And this was basically a prequel to everything that happened in Xenoblade Chronicles 2, including fleshing out a lot of the characters that were teased, barely highlighted, or were your nemesis in the game. And it was really something special because, you know, this was a full-on adventure. This was like, I believe it was like 20 hours, give or take, which I know was only a fraction of the main game, but it was a lot of fun. The combat system was so refined based on what it was in the original. Like, they literally said, this isn't exactly what it was in the original game. It's a little different, and I liked it more because I knew what I was doing. There were times that in Xenoblade Chronicles 2 that I didn't understand what was going on because of the very deep nature of it. But this one I felt like was much more in tune, an easy or a combat system to adapt to. You know, and the characters were a lot of fun. There was a lot of over-the-top shenanigans, and I loved it. But it filled in a story. And now, it wasn't perfect, because the ending was a little abrupt and all that, but the depth that they went to with this prequel, if you will, it was beyond what a DLC is likely. Even when you think of, like, Sindered Shadows, and like, oh yeah, we're adding, like, you know, 8 to 10 hours of combat for you. But we know that once we get into the time jump, it doesn't really matter. You know, it was like, we're not going to... Based on what they told us, like, it's not going to affect the overall story. They're a side quest, not a fourth true house.
Right.
You know, their involvement goes up to a limit and everything. And that's fine. You know, it would be weird for them to add an entirely new path, especially since we have 4 in the main game already. So I could forgive them for that. But for Xenoblade, they really went beyond it with, you know, learning about Torna, why it fell, you know, what happened to Jin and all the other characters. And it's like, okay, this is a lot deeper than I remember it to be. And I was grateful for that. And it took me, I kid you not, ladies and gentlemen, it took me a long time to think of, like, what is my favorite DLC ever? Because I'm usually not the guy that buys DLC. And when it comes to the Nintendo, they honestly haven't had DLC until the 3DS and the Wii U. So, and I haven't had an Xbox console or a PlayStation instead of the PS2, which didn't have DLC at all. So outside of maybe the occasional PC game, I don't really get DLC. So it took me a while, but then when I thought about Torna, I was like, boom, that's it. So one of the greatest RPGs ever, as Tyler has noted multiple times.
Of course, firmly disagree with Xenoblade Chronicles 2 being named in anything good, but in theory, if, let's just say, the game was remotely fun to play, in theory, I see where you're coming from on this, because it was a critical story expansion that kind of opened up your perspective of the world. You're playing as different characters that tied into the main game, so that's always cool. You're getting these backstories for some of the villains. That is DLC done right, if only the game was remotely enjoyable.
It was, but, you know, haters gonna hate. Right, Will?
Will is, he will act like he's not a hater, but Will, how far are you in Xenoblade Chronicles 2?
I haven't actually touched it in a while back now.
Ooh,
so, yeah.
Because it's not very good.
No, Zelda was one of the best games ever, and it took him, like, well over a year to beat it, so shut your mouth.
But he's like an hour. Will played that for many hours before he beat it. I'm going to defend Will on the Zelda one, because you played that for how many hours, Will, total?
Last I checked, I think it's like well over, let's see, near about 100 hours, like, give or take.
But still, 100 hours over well over a year, which means he didn't even play like 20 minutes a day. So, yeah, you can't defend it. And I beat it in 2 weeks, and I still sank 50 hours into it. You're welcome. And you know why I did that, Keith? Because you asked me to. You said, Todd, if you review the game, it has to be within 2 weeks of launch, and I did it! I did it for you!
You did.
I did! Alright, Will, what's your favorite DLC?
This one's pretty much a no-brainer for me. It's like one of the earlier DLC practices for Nintendo Switches. And it's gotta be Splatoon 2's Octo expansion. Like, that expansion has for Splatoon 2, like, you really pretty much, like, made a great product with Splatoon 1 and then with Splatoon 2. Like, everyone was basically clamoring to play as an Octoling, and, like, lo and behold, in the source code, and now we have a full-fledged DLC, we actually can play said Octoling in its different forms. But also, just, like, the expanded levels. Actually, it was so difficult, like, to the point. Like, it provided a legitimate challenge. Like, just basically the skills, especially the grind rail challenge. How many times I died. It's just, like, Octo Expansion is definitely one of the best things Nintendo did at DLC practices. Because, one, like, the levels, honestly got challenging. And then the fact that it utilizes all of the weapons, like, from the snipers, from the rollers, to even using, like, the ball as, like, a hamster ball to one challenge. It's like, how they create these levels with their weapons is, like, it's so amazing, honestly. And the fact they also, like, they basically, like, kept with the whole aesthetic of being underground, the whole train system. It's just, like, and also expanding more of the lore of Splatoon 2, like, yeah, give me more lore, give me more, like, funny dialogue, including that whole chat log with the agents. It's just, like, very funny. I love it. Of course, like, the throwback to Splatoon 1, great as well. And, yeah, and of course, that final boss, like, and that music is just, like, that is perfect. That is absolute perfect of how to, like, finish up a DLC. And, of course, the completion bonus of, like, getting the golden takoyaki is, like, yeah, it basically checks off every single thing that you want in DLC. Like, you want to play, like, the basic product with, like, lore, guns, and more of it, and you get to play as an Octoling at the end of it? Great. But you want to go even further beyond for a completionist route and actually get that said golden takoyaki for bragging rights? You can do so. So, like, it pretty much got everything for you. Be able to be a casual or a completionist. So, yeah, for me, Octo Expansion is a no-brainer. One of the best DLCs Nintendo has released since.
Yeah, I would have, honestly, when I was thinking about the DLC, one of the things that first got into my head was the Octo Expansion, because it was so unexpected, and the trailer that they did for it was really cool and, you know, dark yet flashy and all that, but the content was deep, and I admit, for the first couple Splatfests afterwards, I played as an Octarian. Because I wanted to represent the Octo expansion that I beat. And I liked how they delved into the storyline about how Marina, you know, was an Octoling, and yet she's clearly cooler. Well, we all knew she was cooler. But,
no, it was the opposite. It was they proved that because Pearl was Biggie, therefore way cooler in every way. And she saved with Marina. And
okay,
you know, she,
first
yeah.
of all, you, if, you actually let me, if you actually let me finish, you're gonna hear me say that Marina was cooler than the rest of the Octarians.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, your foolish pride got in your way again, just like how you can keep promising that Nintendo Direct is gonna come, liar. So just for that, Pearl sucks, Marina rocks, Tupac forever. So, but yeah, like going into that was really fun. And you're right, that final boss. And look, we don't give Nintendo a lot of credit for their dark humor, and yet the idea that the Octarians, who were, you know, getting unbrainwashed, were almost thrown into blenders, that's really dark. So thankfully that didn't happen. But it's like, hey, yeah, we're just gonna put you in this blender. What?
The world would have been better if Marina was thrown into a blender.
Oh, shut your mouth.
Oh, don't bring up beef on the whole Splatfest thing. Don't bring up a whole beef.
Never forget Pearl 1. Fixed. In a route, by the way. It was a laugher, Pearl 1.
Uh-huh. Anyway, but like I will fondly remember the Octo expansion, and I will eventually get back into Splatoon, whether I'm playing with Kromcho or you guys, but yeah, that was a really cool way to, because they could have just done, like, you know, extra levels, maybe throw something in it with a little extra single player mode, but then no, they went completely deep into the world, and I loved it.
Yes, and just again the soundtrack definitely one of the also highlights as well. And that Mr. Nogami, he's just such a great developer and character presenting this the entire Splatoon 2 project is like that's the kind of like aside like Arms, Mr. Yabuki, like it's these kind of guys that they care about that product, which even does even more.
All right, and Keith.
Oh yeah, me. Favorite DLC. Oh yeah, it's the Lego Speed Champions for Forza Horizon 4.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
For real?
Yeah. You never heard of this?
No.
Yeah, so basically for Forza Horizon 4, they work with Lego and they develop a completely different a separate island for the cars. You get to drive around and collect Lego pieces to build your own home. Three iconic Lego sets, and they also made special racetracks in the island. So instead of just saying, "Oh, here's a couple cars, here you go," they actually gave you your own island with a lot of stuff to do, and you can also take those Lego cars into the actual Forza Horizon 4 segment of the game and race them alongside the actual cars in the game. A lot of fun. Plus, if anybody's ever watched the Lego movie, the song "Everything Is Awesome" is on one of the radio stations.
Of
non-stop.
Course it is.
Oh no, that's horrible.
I love it.
Dude, no, horrible. That's very horrible. Cool. Dude, Everything is awesome.
When I first played the DLC, I couldn't stop grinning because I'm a big fan of Legos.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is really cool. And this is not the first time they've done something like this because on Forza Horizon 3, they worked with Hot Wheels. And they gave us the Hot Wheels speed track. Huh. So that was pretty cool. That was one of my favorite DLCs because I don't really have a lot of DLCs that are like strike me as, wow, this is pretty good. But when I do see something that's amazingly good like this, I enjoy it.
Yeah,
that's a very creative crossover too. In a way, it almost reminds me of Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle in that like it's so out there and yet it works so perfectly.
If I had played the Donkey Kong DLC for that, I'm sure that would have been one of my top contenders because they clearly went all in on that one with, you know, bringing in DK and a Cranky Rabbit and all that. But
yeah.
I kind of wish there had been more DLC for that game, but, you know, it got one and it's fine.
DLC can be so hit and miss, too. I do think we're lucky with Nintendo. They generally do a good job with it. I mean, the Fire Emblem DLC... I think Three Houses has been really good in its value, but the 3DS games, those DLCs were way overpriced. You run into that with a lot of different companies, but usually Nintendo does a pretty good job with it.
They're not like some companies that just throw out random DLC just because they can and they want to make a cheap buck. But
yeah. I've always liked Bethesda's DLCs too. Fallout New Vegas has some of my favorite DLC missions.
Fallout and Bethesda, they know how to do DLC. They don't know how to do MMOs, but they know how to do DLC.
Right.
So, but yeah, and there's other good DLCs out there. Although I heard that the Kingdom Hearts 3 DLC, RE9, is the biggest piece of crap out there. You know, an increased difficulty, which is fine on an objective level, but you know, you have to be at a certain point and level in the main game to do well in the DLC, and then like the story that you get doesn't make any gosh dang sense, and then apparently spoilers, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're in the Matrix, okay? So apparently like this whole thing with Sora is a dream, and it's like, wait a minute, that can't be right because if Sora's dreaming, then none of this actually makes sense. And that's the point. It's a Matrix thing. Or like Star Ocean till the end of time. You know, it's like, none of it is real. Or is it? You don't know. This is supposed to be the end of the freaking saga. You said it was the end of the saga to Tetsuya Nomura. You die. You die.
Yeah, it's kind of definitely the thing. Yeah, like I kind of like researched the details. Like again, you face up against the organization again, and the fact you had to face up against Azora, which is that Noctis ripoff that was previewed in the main game, which apparently there's also two endings depending if you win or lose against your Azora, is like yeah okay. And you thought the Kingdom Hearts rabbit hole was gonna stop there? Nope, it's gonna continue down and down.
Yeah, it's like. And then in 20 years, we'll have Kingdom Hearts 4! And we'll be playing as the son of Sora, even though we don't really know what happened to Sora and Kairi in the first place.
And maybe Final Fantasy Remake will be out by then.
Oh, I wouldn't bet on that.
The complete product. No. Like, complete, because again, this is going
to
be...
No, Final I'm talking about the remake, first yeah. piece that's supposed to come out in any...
Both jokes are accurate.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy Remake, the final part. For real this time. XD plus Knuckles. Oh, gosh. It's like, a Cloud will actually play the game with you. That's how far technology will be at that point. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. But yes, but do let us know what your favorite pieces of DLC out there, Nintendo or beyond. We are honestly very curious. So with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler!
Yes, last week we didn't have a poll question, which was a nice, you know, reprieve for...
All right, I got a good one for this week, and it's about the Nintendo Direct.
Okay.
As always, phrase it how you want, but, all right. Since the Nintendo Direct did not come out this week, how long should we raise Tyler for his false prediction? Oh. A, the next 24 hours. B, throughout Valentine's Day weekend. C, until the Nintendo Direct comes out. D, laugh until you can't laugh no more. I'm kidding. There honestly isn't really much to do a poll question on this week. So
that's true.
Unless you want to do, like, you know, this, about the Sonic movie, but I, yeah, like just, I think it was pushing at that point. So,
yeah.
All right, so no poll question this week, but hopefully if there is a Nintendo Direct next week, glares at Tyler, we will have something about that then. But, of course, let us know what you think about everything that's been going on this week, including the Fire Emblem DLC. Do you have it? Are you going to get it? And if so, when? Are you happy that Nintendo is still going to be a big presence at E3? What do you think about the various Smash Bros. DLC news? What Sora and Smash Brothers? When are we going to get the first character reveal for Fighter Pack 2? Do let us know. Are you seeing Sonic the Hedgehog this weekend? Do you have Pokemon Home? And, of course, what is your favorite DLC of all time? If you answer us, we'll be sure to name drop you in next week's episode. So, for Tellius Tyler, Wario Will, glad to have you back, buddy. King Koopa K, thanks for coming back for a second week in a row. I am Triforce Tyler. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level, so raise the flag.